all is, if we are all so inclined. So for this evening, we're calling together the 24th meeting of the Municipal Courts Task Force. Today is June 29th, 2016. Excused from the meeting are the Honorable Scott Miller, Ithaca City Court Judge, as well as Elizabeth Thomas, who is the supervisor for the Town of Ulysses. Present, we have the Honorable Gwen Wilkinson, and welcome, and we're glad to see you here. Honorable Betty Poole, Honorable Glenn Galbraith, Mark Solomon, and the Honorable Jason Leifer, and then the ordinary Ray Schlatter is your chair. We are also joined by Joe Mariana, who is the Tompkins County Administrator, and soon to be joined, I'm sure, by Marsha Lynch, and any members of the public who may show up. So welcome. We are getting close to the end, but we still have some more work to do. So for this evening, first of all, we have the minutes of June 14, 2016.
Subject to typographical correction, I move the minutes of adoption.
Right. And any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, good. And Joe, I think you've already
received some. I have, yes.
You're working on it. Okay, good. Any public comment? This is the time of the meeting where the members of the public are permitted to speak and on any issue before the task force briefly. There is no public comment. Chair's report. I really would very, very much like to have one more meeting, and that's it. I'm hoping that and there's obviously still work to be done on this report, but I'm hoping that by next time it will be completed. It's already kind of completed, but it needs an executive summary, and it needs obviously changes in language and substance, and I mean that's part of what I hope we can do today. But I am hoping that by the next meeting, which, by the way, I'm hoping we can do next Wednesday, if we can. I was really determined to get this done by the end of June, but it looks like we're slipping.
Isn't that a problem for Scott?
Yeah, he won't be back until
so
the 7th.
Oh.
You wanted to have it after the 8th. Now, after the 8th, I'm no longer the district attorney, so.
Yeah, but we're going to just wink and a nod on that one.
So. Attorney emeritus.
Okay,
you're kind of like the district attorney because there won't be any successor at that point. So, you know, you could be like Justice Sandra O'Connor. You know, you're Sandra Day O'Connor. You'll continue serving until there's a successor appointed.
All right, I consider
that. Okay, so apparently next, I really would like to find a date when everybody could be here. So if
he asked
for
the
date. Yes.
Oh, he did.
After
he said after the 8th.
He's on vacation through the 7th.
All right. Well, as we kind of go through today, let's everybody, by the end of the meeting, let's pick another date. Liz is, would like to know and have it in her calendar. So let's do what we can to get another date as early in July as we possibly can. But that's it for my report. Joe?
Just my usual, speaking of the microphones, this is important stuff, so if you would do that, it makes it much easier for our audience to hear it.
So, what you have before you is a document that is dated June 27, 2016. I've already found further areas where changes need to be made. I did, for ease of everybody's use, I put the pages where clearly there are gaps and data needs to be inserted. Some of it is very simple. Some of it was going to take a little bit more effort. I did want to just, at the beginning of this discussion, just tell you the areas where I think we need to have some substantive discussion or further work, and then we can apportion our time here today as much as possible. First of all, obviously, we need an executive summary. That can be very simple, and I can write that as soon as I know exactly what the finished product is. I did want to find out whether we wanted to add any additional acknowledgements. I did acknowledge, I added Judge Chernish to the acknowledgements. That was the only real change there, plus we obviously put in the changes that Gwen had provided to us, and Mark had provided as well. There is, the changes that we did make from the last time, I added the therapeutic language with respect to the DWI part in Section 3A1. We have added the assigned counsel avoided costs. That's based on an email that I'd received from Lance, and it was the work of Lance and Julia. However, we still need to put in some numbers for the DWI part, the avoided costs for the sheriff, as well as we need to complete a chart with respect to avoided costs if we do the centralized arraignment facility, which would be in Section 3C1. There are some numbers that we need to come to terms with for the youth court. How many cases would be removed effectively from the courts because of that? I did make some changes to the mental health court language, consistent with what I had thought we discussed the last time. We need to put in some language about the OAR caps. I think that's in the minutes someplace. I just need to go find it. I did make a fair amount of change to the bail language because that was reflecting the conversations that we had at the last meeting. And then the future, Section 4, is completely my product. Obviously, that I would like today to be the prominent point of discussion as we go forward. So that's kind of where we are. I think stylistically, there are questions whether we wish to beef it up a little in some places or not. I'm still trying to figure out some of the locutions that I've used, whether I wish to continue with some of those or not, especially in Section 4. Those are the areas where I see that we need work, in addition to the places where I said we need some data that I've outlined at the cover sheet for the report itself. So with that being said, we can go through the easy stuff. Why don't we start with the additional acknowledgments? Should we acknowledge anybody else, or are we okay with that? Glenn?
I've got a couple of corrections to mine.
Okay.
Which I actually thought I emailed to you, but they didn't make it.
No, if you did, I apologize.
I can redo those. But there's one that finally struck me, and that's your own. I don't even think you're listed as the chair of this committee in the report. And I think that needs to be beefed up. One, that you're identified as the chair, and two, that you really have taken the lead and major responsibility for getting this committee moving and taking the responsibility for doing the vast majority of the writing. Now, if you're too shy about doing that, somebody else may be able to write it, but it really needs to be done, right?
Makes me a bigger target, too.
You're a big target. We're smaller targets.
I'd be willing to... you're right. We probably ought to just... I could put a separate final paragraph that just says Ray is the chair of this committee.
Well, I think you're more than just the chair. You're really the driving force of it.
Yeah, but I don't want to say that. So, as the chair of the task... But thank you. I appreciate your concern about that. But let's just—we can leave it at that. That'll be at page 7. Okay. And Glenn, I'm sorry. Let me just—are there—are these changes that I can print in right now, or do you want to resend
it? Yeah, I can tell you. Quick, okay. Page 2 at the bottom.
Yes.
I've actually been elected 7 times.
7 times, okay.
And the top of page 3, second sentence, cross out full-term externships and just put the word the in there, because there are a bunch of externship courses I covered.
I'm sorry, and...
Second sentence, yeah. Second line, where it says full-term.
Yes.
Cross that out, put the word "the" in. T-H-E.
Oh, "the." I'm sorry.
Right. And at the very end of my section, I actually litigated for 25 years with law students in Cornell Legal Aid.
Okay. So how do you want, let me see.
You just put, he also worked with law students representing low-income clients at Cornell Legal Aid since 1986.
Okay. He also worked with law. Okay. He also worked with law students at Cornell University?
At Cornell Legal Aid. Since 1986.
All right, anything else that people would like to add to the additional acknowledgments or to the acknowledgement section? All right, good. Are the, let's just, I don't want to spend a huge amount of time on this, but is the language in the well, I'll call it the therapeutic paragraph for the DWI part, is that acceptable? I think Glenn,
you would page on that?
Yeah, let me get it for you.
Um, 27, I think, second full paragraph.
Yes, 27, there you go.
I think that language is fine. I mean, I think that's, it's from the remarks that Scott made, right?
Yes.
And the discussion from that. I think this accurately reflects it. I think it's good.
I think it's one of the driving arguments in favor of it.
Okay. So, I mean, in other words, that's, I just want to make sure I didn't, you know, okay, good.
It would be good, right, to make sure Scott's okay with it.
I will hear from Scott. He's going to, he promised to send his emailed comments. So if he has any tweaking of that, I'll incorporate that. You know. All right, so the next area, I'd kind of like to get into a little bit of a discussion about the avoided costs issue, because I want to make sure that everybody is comfortable with those numbers. And this would be at page, starting at page 32 and 33.
I don't want to jump ahead, but
yeah.
On page 33, avoided local court costs came up with $35,000.
Right.
I'm quite sure where that number came from. I don't know they have a problem with it. I just don't quite understand it.
Here's the calculation. I took the, I think I estimated that it there's about 3 hours of time spent on the average DWI case in the local town courts from start to finish. 3 hours of time. And so I figured if 3 hours times 240 is 750 hours, we had received evidence before that the average amount of time by town justices is anywhere from 10 to 20 hours per week was the average. And so I thought that would then be the equivalent of one town justice and the equivalent of one town court clerk. Now, I'm not saying that that would mean, or maybe it was three quarters of a town court clerk, but my point was, and then I estimated that the average cost for that is on average about $18,000 to $20,000 for a town justice, and three quarters of $20,000 to $25,000 for a town clerk. Now, some of them are higher, some of them are lower, but if they're putting in about that much time, that's what I felt was accurate, if you include all of the costs, you know, the fringes and everything. So I thought that, so basically it was roughly 20 and roughly 15, so a total of 35,000. So that these are all very, very soft numbers, but that's how I got to it. I don't know, Betty, do those sound accurate or not?
Well, I
yes, it's a rational way of coming up with a figure. I mean, you get some part-time clerks, you get some part-time judges, you get some full-time judges, and full-time clerks.
I just think it would become, I mean, we could, but the more of that kind of detail you come to, because the end product is a soft product in any event.
I understand the problem with doing so.
Yeah.
But there's also a problem, isn't there, with not doing so?
Well, that's why I said the combined savings in the aggregate time of the town and village justices and clerks calculate to approximately the equivalent of one town justice and one clerk, given their part-time status and the estimate of time spent per week in all cases. So I kind of gave the formula there. The minutia, the bottom line here is, if you think about the underlying issue is it's going to cost $650,000 to fund this DWI part justice and the program, and it's only going to, we're only going to at best offset it by less than half of that. So the issue cannot be economic savings. The issue has to be we have to find money from some other source, which I've thrown out can be the state because of our inequity in the judges. But whether that final number is, you know, 250,000 or 300,000 or 400,000, it still really doesn't matter. Those are not, there's no way those avoided costs are going to add up to the cost of the county court judge. And I think that's the point we're trying to make here, is that you can't buy into that thinking you're going to save money. So.
I'd like to point out, back on page 32, I think the court clerk's salary is quite light.
In these,
if we looked online and saw the average court,
I'm sorry, Betty, could you speak into your?
I'm very sorry. Okay, I think the court clerk salary is extremely light.
You're talking about the estimates, the 50,000?
Preliminary estimates, including the following. Yes,
right.
The county court law clerk, the court clerk, because that would be a state court clerk. Is that not correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a very light figure. I can tell you that the city chief clerk makes close to probably 85.
Right, but this wouldn't be a chief clerk.
Well, it'd be the only clerk too, correct? You're only recommending one clerk?
No, this would be, if you think about it, this would be a person who would be in the clerk's office, who would be doing the processing of DWI paperwork in the clerk's office. So it would not be considered a chief clerk or a deputy, it would be, a deputy clerk.
I think it would dependent upon how the state classifies it.
Well, I got these from Judge Rowley, but I can certainly revisit this with him. I just flagged it, so I can, between now and the next time I'm here. Together,
and only
I'll
one clerk?
Right. Well, there's an administrative.
You're taking on all of the.
Yeah. There's an administrative assistant in here as well as the clerk. So pure support staff work would go to the administrative assistants. More traditional court clerk work would go to this. I think Ray's right. This is not a high level. This is kind of a medium level clerk. But again, I'm happy to call Judge Rowley and make sure we got this right.
Well, I'm just basing it on what knowledge I have, because I happen to have applied for county court clerk's judge.
The other thing is that, remember, this number does not include the fringe benefits. That's a separate number.
Right.
Okay. So these are just a straight salary.
But this is also the clerk that would be in court whenever court's in session.
This would be the clerk who's in court when the court's in session.
And then processing the paperwork.
Yes, along with the administrative assistant.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I have no idea what that salary is.
And I think, So, okay, so Joe will check that, and if, frankly, if it's, if the number's bigger, if it's, you know, 60,000, we'll just, we'll put 60,000 in, and we'll adjust the total estimated cost accordingly. Okay. So the piece that we're still going to try to come to terms with is the avoided law enforcement cost, and I know we, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I have my ideas, but do you, Joe, have any idea how you're going to go about getting that number?
Brian and I are working on it. So it's Brian Robinson, right. And I have exchanged things back and forth. He has called a guesstimate right now. I think within the next couple of days, we should be able to have a number to plug in here.
All right.
He thinks it may be in the range of 25 to 30 hours a month. Okay. That's kind of his first estimate. I want to make sure that we've got that as close to reality as we can, and then we'll apply the hourly rate and the fringe rate to that.
Okay.
Is that for having the centralized arraignment?
It is. That's for centralized arraignment.
Is he going to look into if the court schedules were spaced out differently, whether like the savings that might generate too?
That wasn't on his to-do list, but I can add it. I will. Ray Bunce can be helpful there too, I think.
The other piece, though, is there's actually two pieces on the avoided costs. You have the avoided costs that will go in the centralized arraignment piece, but we also have the avoided costs, and it may be a very small number, but on the DWI part piece, because under those circumstances, you're not going to be transporting out to all the different courts. You're just going to be but by the same token, I think it's pretty clear that most of the DWI defendants are not being transported. And so they're not incarcerated. They're not being held. And so I wouldn't expect that to be a big number, but I think there's probably got to be some kind of number plugged in there. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to get those numbers. We'll put those in. As long as we're talking, are there any other questions with respect to the avoided costs?
I want to raise a question about the centralized arraignment facility.
Yeah, we're going to go there in a second. But the avoided costs with respect to the DWI part. Any other questions or concerns?
Well, one issue, and I don't know that we need to do anything with this. A lot of these avoided costs are not going to be avoided. That is, if we avoid $35,000 of local court costs of judges and clerks, it's not as though we lose a judge or a clerk that doesn't have to be paid for. They're just going to do other things.
And that's a good point. And let me, so that there's no question about it, in the interest of full transparency, I think part of this exercise and part of where this report at least suggests, part of that direction is that to the extent that the demands on the local courts, the individual local courts, to the extent that those demands are reduced, whether it's by establishing a DWI part or engaging the LEAD program or using youth court or perhaps the mental health court if we go that route, to the extent those demands are reduced, there will be then greater pressure by the towns and villages to restructure those courts, to consolidate perhaps, to eliminate one justice, or to reduce the hours, the part-time hours of existing justices. In other words, it's an implicit invitation to each of those municipalities to reduce their respective costs because the burden is not as great. But there's no way that we can legislate that. There's no way that we can mandate it in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying that the market, here I am, a free marketeer, the market may very well drive that result.
Well, and not so implicitly, because that's exactly what you set forth in the beginning of the document,
yeah,
is the reduced caseload.
I think as a practical matter, though, the only way that works is by reducing the salary of each of the judges and clerks proportionate to the lesser amount of work each of them has to do. Because I don't think any of the nibbling that we do at reducing costs is very likely to result in actually dropping the workload enough that you can get rid of a judge or a clerk. Because there's so many, and you're just taking off a little bit from each of them, as opposed to big chunks.
Well, I think what you're going to see, though, is something that's similar is happening now in Newfield and Enfield, you know, where Judge Chernish and Judge Poole are now basically between the two of them are handling the entire load for those two municipalities, whereas there used to be a total of three. And I think that's the kind of thing that you may see in some of the other outer.
I don't disagree with your suggestion and what it's aimed at doing. It's just, if I didn't do DWIs anymore, my workload isn't going to change that much. And my clerk's not going to get that much extra free time. That I'm not going to have that vacuum reabsorbing some new cases. I think it's unlikely.
I think you find the most relief in the full-time, like town of Ithaca, town of Dryden.
Oh, that could be, maybe.
Yeah. And there may be adjustments there. So
I'm not disagreeing with where you're headed with it and what you're using as sort of the basic premise behind it. I just wonder, I question practically whether it will make any difference.
And that'll depend on each of the municipalities.
Exactly.
Cayuga Heights may say, you know, we can afford to continue paying you and it's not a big deal for you. But it may be a big deal in Groton, you know, that type of thing. All right, let's go to the centralized arraignment, though, because I think that's... and Mark, go ahead.
What page?
This is at 42.
I can't recall now what the factors were that were at work in moderating our enthusiasm for centralized arraignment. One of them surely was the reports from the from Suffolk County, was it?
Yeah, the district court.
Nassau.
Yeah,
Nassau,
right.
But another may have been the requirement that there be legislative action.
Right.
And now Joe has, and I thank you, Joe, now Joe has found that legislative action has been completed but for the signature of the governor, is that correct?
Correct, yeah. I think it was one of the pieces that Betty had pulled early on in the process.
Right. Do we have a prognosis? Do we have a prediction about the governor's position on this matter? Do we know?
I don't think this is a controversial item. I think he has a lot of items that are. I don't think this is one of them, so I would expect passage.
And in light of that, it would seem to me that this proposal might be slightly rewritten to be more... encouraging.
It might actually get shifted to a different section. This may not be one that you need legislation for.
Well, we need legislation now. If the governor signs it, then we don't need legislation.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Because the legislation is enabling legislation. You know, I've read the bill, you all have it. The bill enables the municipalities to implement that kind of a thing, but it doesn't...
you're right.
It doesn't... require them to do it, and it doesn't make it automatic. And I think they also have to do it in combination with the Office of Court Administration.
Yes.
So it's still, there's still some water that has to be carried on the thing. The reason I wrote it the way I did was because this was a recommendation that we had even before the legislation had been written, and if we had met our deadline, it would have been. It's kind of like having a to-do list, and you write down that you already went to the farmer's market, but you cross it off because you really want to make your Saturday productive, you know, that kind of thing. So, Mark, if you want to beef it up in some fashion, send me some language, and I'll be glad to plug it in. I did the word acceptable at page 42. It's really accessible. That was a typo at our end, so. So ideally, this part will be situated in a publicly accessible facility. And frankly, I mentioned the public safety building, but it may be, for cost purposes, that we may wish to do it not in the public safety building. We may wish to do it in an existing courthouse facility, such as the Ithaca Town Court or the, you know, something more centrally located. Or we may wish to have it rotate. In other words, it'll be a centralized after-hours arraignment, but it might be in Dryden, you know, on the first weekend of the month, and it might be in Ithaca the second weekend, and it might be in, you know, I doubt that they'll put it all the way out in Ulysses, but in other words, there may be ways to kind of move it around if that makes sense, especially if the judges who are assigned is a Dryden judge, or if the judge is assigned as an Ithaca town justice. So I'm open to suggestions. I think we ought to kind of figure that piece out.
And I think also that if we don't hold it in the same building that is a police station or a jail, we avoid running afoul of the case law that makes it pretty clear that you can't do an arraignment in a holding cell and you can't do an arraignment in the hallway of a jail. It has to have not only be publicly accessible, but it has to be a neutral place. It has to be an impartial place, is the flavor of the case law on this point. So there's that to be considered as well.
Maybe we ought to add the words "and neutral," so publicly accessible and neutral.
I mean, I think the idea, if we're going to have the local judges sitting on a rotation, I don't think we should make them drive 20 miles to do an arraignment, just in terms of equity. If we're going to continue to have all our separate courts, then we might as well use those for all the arraignments.
And it actually makes a big difference for a judge to do the arraignment in their own court as opposed to another court. Like last weekend I was covering for the city, and the question was, would I do the arraignments in the city or would I do them up in the village? And I said, well, I'd be willing to do it in the city, but that means I've got to know exactly what kind of case it is, go to my court, grab all the necessary forms that I'm likely to need, take them down, and hope I got the right ones, because I'm not going to go rifling through the city court judge's desk for forms. So there is a big advantage of either having one central location where we could each leave stuff there, or have it go and have it rotate to our own courts, and thus we could move people through that system.
And that way, the judges would have access to the computers.
Right,
well.
Because we have to turn on the recorders, and yes. I wouldn't know how to turn on the recorder down in the city.
So that may be, in that same paragraph there, we could just sentence something along the lines of the existing courts can be used to coincide with the venue of the assigned rotating justice. You know, something along those lines.
It does create a problem if it's the week that the Ulysses judge has it or something, and something happens in Groton, it's a long way around.
Right.
But we've got that problem regardless.
It's going to be the same thing anyway, right, when it's the Groton turn, exactly. Groton rotation, and something happens in Ulysses. And if you've been noticing lately, stuff has been happening in Trumansburg. So.
Well, you know, the other piece of it, too, is that if we establish the rotations based on volume as opposed to just, you know, 18 town justices taking 1/18th of the time.
And I like that.
You know, so the Dryden judges and the Ithaca Town Court judges would be, Jim's going to love this, but they would be assigned more often, you know.
Right.
Well, if you have further thoughts on that, please get them, if you could, before the end of the week to Mark and to me, and between us we will craft either more robust or different language for this.
One more point. Take it, Joe. Yeah. This legislation doesn't in any way impact the financial burden of the question. This is not going to become a state obligation.
just because this enabling legislation has been enacted. Am I correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
If I could just weigh in a little bit here on the economics of the alternatives. I think if your goal is savings, then the closer the centralized arraignment spot is to the public safety building, the more savings you might realize. Because when you think about an officer, a deputy, with somebody in the back of the car, if it's rotating to the various courts, there's still a lot of travel time and wait time that goes along with that. Generally, they're going to have to check back in. They're going to have to process the person back at the public safety building, so you've got some back and forth traffic. The ideal thing, the perfect, which you can't accomplish, would be, maybe you can, if you could be very close to the public safety building, then when the officer brings a person for processing, they can drop them off and get back on the road. And that person can be held while they're waiting for the judge and the attorneys to arrive, and then that person, there's a disposition at that point.
So, just point of clarification, does the state legislation allow for Skyped arraignments?
I think that's in the process. I think it's been thrown back and forth.
I'm not sure. I think this legislation is silent. My experience in this back in Onondaga County was the law currently permits video arraignments, but it's up to the defense bar to decide whether they want to take advantage of that or not. And at least in Onondaga County, the answer was no. That the equipment was there, everything was in place, but the choice was made not to do that. So I think there's legal authority to do it right now.
I believe that's correct, and I believe that, not to put too fine a point on it, that it's up to the defendant whether they want to be arraigned by video. Not so the defense counsel can say, yeah, I have no problem, Judge, but the defendant can say no. Also, the defendant can change his or her mind at any time in the process. And the other issue that arose, there's actually been sort of nitty-gritty discussions of this. The other issue that arose was that if the defense counsel is not present at the jail where the arraignment would take place, how do they have a private conversation with their client, and a conversation that their client believes is private was another issue that came up.
Well, what I was kind of driving at was the defense counsel and the defendant would be there in person. It would be the judge who would be handling the arraignment from, you know, Cayuga Heights or from Dryden or from Groton.
But that creates a problem if it's an arraignment outside of business hours, it's okay. But if it's a calendar call and the lawyer has got a bunch of guys on for arraignment.
No. I'm talking about after hours. Just for the centralized arraignment.
All right. Because the issue has been raised in connection with all defendants who are at the jail instead of bringing them
right,
to court at any hour.
The reverse.
Right.
What I'm trying to do is to see whether we could, because I think Joe's point is well made, and that is that if we did the rotating thing, we're kind of defeating, we're not defeating the purpose, but we're certainly pushing it back in terms of its effectiveness. So the question might be, how can we have a more centralized location that is fixed, such as near the public, in other words, as I've written this, and still accommodate the town justices who would be serving on a rotating basis. And the answer to that is one possibility would be to Skype. Allow them to Skype in from their home, for that matter.
So yeah. If they have their forms and things at home and their files and they need to be able to get the criminal histories, I think it gets a little complicated.
Yeah, but what? So remind me again. First, this initial arraignment. Do you guys? I guess the officer does hand you a rap sheet. Right?
Two. They're supposed to hand two.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Sometimes not, but we're working on that. They're supposed to.
Well, I think what I'd like. I think it would be. Helpful for everybody to give some further thought to this, and because we really do need to, if we're going to do it on the rotating, then I think that whatever savings we're talking about are probably there probably aren't any.
Well, what if we considered having something on the, you know, at the public safety building, not where the cells are, and there was some talk, and Joe, you might be able to weigh in here, there was some talk about moving some of the civil parts of that, right, of the sheriff's office?
There was. There was talk about moving everything other than jail functions out of that building. There'd obviously need to be a new home.
Right. So that hasn't gotten very far, because if you had a space there that was a public space that didn't have, you know, jail doors and benches with bull rings and things on them, there would be no problem with having arraignments there. Just have to be careful. But if a space could be created there, it would make the most sense economically. But you just don't want all these cases going up because you arraigned them while they were handcuffed to a bull ring.
I think that's correct. The question then is, how do we get the judges, from the outer lying areas to agree to come in and conduct those arraignments?
Well, we might have to be able to digitize all of the forms so that they can easily and quickly access them and print them out.
And if it was one location, each of us who have our own forms or our own predilection, et cetera, we could have a drawer that we could each store our own sets of forms or what have you.
True.
The majority of mine I take right from the actual program itself.
Yeah, I carry a bunch of them around just for that very purpose, but if I knew I was going to go to the same place every time, I could lay in what I need.
Put together a go bag with
everything.
I mean, I think if the economic savings, if it makes that much sense economically, then I think we find a way to make it work for the judges that they come to one location every single time.
And is it likely we'd have like 4 or 5 arraignments a night?
If that's so,
then maybe we'd have a cot up there rather than getting out of bed, coming in, going home, and then getting out of bed, coming back in. It's a thought.
No, actually, that's almost...
It's very comfortable, too, I'm sure.
Well, there's another piece as well, and that is that this particular space may be used intermittently, but only after hours and on weekends. So it would be nice to figure out how we could also make the space usable to the county during the weekdays, during business hours.
Exactly, yeah.
Kind of a conference room or something that would be...
I do have a note from Brian Robinson on frequency of arrests after hours. And this is only the sheriff's office. He thinks it's about 2 to 3 per week from the sheriff's office. So I don't know whether you double that for the village.
Arraignable arrests.
Arrests. Yeah. That result in after hours arraignments.
2 or 3 a week?
That doesn't count the city police.
Correct. I'm surprised that it's that low for the sheriff.
We do have that in the minutes. We can look that up because we received that data anecdotally, so I'm presuming it was reflected in the minutes. There was, Brian talked about it, the state police, I think, gave us the numbers that they were taking after hours arraignments, and I don't know if we got one from the city or not, but it seems to me we also got it. Some of the town justices were saying that they would only do it, like once a month or once a, I remember Judge Phoenix, I think, gave us a number. We can go back through the minutes and try to put a number on that. What anecdotally what the numbers were that were told to us.
Okay.
But if it is only that frequency, then I don't think it. Then I think doing it at the facility makes sense, and we might even allow that town justices. Some town if there was some remuneration, some town justices may be more willing to do it.
There is.
Is there?
There is. It's in the legislation. Such judge or justice shall be entitled to such compensation and travel expenses as the chief administrator shall prescribe by rule payable out of funds appropriated to the state judiciary for such purpose.
There you go. So that might actually be another incentive. So the folks in Ulysses may not want to do it, in Groton may not want to do it. The folks in Ithaca, Cuga Heights, Lansing, they may want to do it, and because of the money. I mean, that. All right, so why don't we, can we write this then, that it would be a similar to what we have in terms of central location, rotating judges consistent with whatever the rules are under the law, Jason, makes sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay, all right. Let's go with that. The bail language, have I accurately captured? We've got two places for the bail. One is where we talked about the normative language and, you know, all that stuff. That was in page 39. The section is entitled.
For bail limits?
No, no, there's two areas. So go, I just want to make sure the language that I put in is acceptable.
Okay.
It's called Release Defendants ROR or on Realistic Bail. That's page 39, item 3, and it goes into page 40. I think I captured what we discussed, but I want to make sure that everybody's happy with that.
I had potential addition to that. As in the very last sentence, you have generally local courts should not set bail in excess of that limit. I thought it might be helpful to add, generally, prosecutors should not recommend and local courts should not set bail in excess of that limit. I think some courts are understandably, but maybe regrettably, influenced pretty heavily by what the prosecutors recommend. And I think we're hoping the prosecutors will lower their recommendations, and that we're also hoping that local courts will not set their bail in excess of that limit. I just thought the pressure ought to go both directions, that's all.
I'm perfectly fine with that.
I'm not fine with that. As you know, I'm only partly fine with this. I in the first place, the purpose of bail is to ensure that a defendant returns to court. We don't need simply in there, and I don't think that has a connotation that I want to sign on to, because it's often a question. I don't agree that the fact that these are misdemeanor cases and if people run away, we'll catch them again is a reason not to care if they do run away. So I don't agree with that either, as you know from last meeting.
Right. Yeah, but it is modified. It says general.
It's a general.
And there's escape there for both prosecutors and
right.
for judges to
right.
go far in excess. In fact, we'll get to that when we get to the actual dollar figure that we have in
on page 42.
I
agree that the judges should be encouraged to articulate on the record the reasons for setting such bail. I think that's a good idea. I don't think that we should try to influence the discretion of the prosecutor. Prosecutors know that the culture about bail is changing, and it's changing markedly, and it's changing quickly. I think that the days of setting high bail on somebody so you can strong arm a plea are behind us. I don't think that's happening anymore. I'm certainly not encouraging it. I do disagree, though, that judges tend to go with what the prosecutor says. I know from personal experience myself that judges frequently don't go with what the prosecutor recommends. In fact, one of them is sitting next to me, and our professional collegiality endured, even though it was tough for about 24 hours. So I think the prosecutor asks for what the prosecutor thinks is appropriate, and I won't agree to limiting the prosecutor's ability to ask for what they think is fair.
And I agree with Gwen on that.
Well, you know, I think, Glenn, if you're willing to withdraw your proposal, I think this language was carefully crafted that reflects the balance that we were trying to strike from prior discussions. I would ask, under the circumstances, if everybody can live with the language as proposed and not include Glenn's tweaking. We all recognize the judge at the end of the day has the final word, and they get paid the big bucks for making those kinds of decisions.
Right. And the other thing you can do, Ray, I mean, frankly, I don't think we have unanimity on all the issues in here. I mean, you guys can vote and...
We could what?
You can vote.
Oh, we can vote.
I'm just telling you, I mean, I know what... invested in what he believes, and I'm invested in what I believe, and we don't agree.
All right, let's just vote. All those in favor of putting in Glenn's language, say aye.
Well, aye. Could you repeat the language again?
The language would be generally, in the very last sentence, it would read as follows. Generally, prosecutors should not recommend, and local courts should not set bail in excess of that limit. All those, have I accurately stated it?
Yes.
All right, so that's the motion is to amend the language to include that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those against say no.
No.
I didn't hear Jason, did you?
Aye.
Okay,
he's
4-2. Language is in.
So you can put it in, but I mean, I think you should indicate however you're indicating. I don't care if you do.
I didn't.
You do it in some paragraphs.
Note that I did not put unanimity in this particular section candidly, it reflects compromise language. It has stuff in there that I gave in on. In other words, by giving the escape valves, and you know, I felt it ought to be absolute, ROR, period. But we wrote it in a way that I thought threaded the needle in a compromise sort of way.
And this is a recommendation. I mean, it's...
It is a recommendation,
And ultimately, it still says generally. So there's an escape valve for everybody.
All right, so the language is in. Generally, prosecutors should not recommend, and... But I don't want little things like this to start blowing this up, so... All right, but otherwise, the language in the bail is good. We're all set? All right. Let's go then, though, to the second part of the bail, because this is in the state legislation. This is at page 43. And I will be the first to admit that I arbitrarily said $1,000. So I'm willing to... be nudged on that. I just felt that we should come up with a dollar amount, and I believe that there should be a dollar amount. I think that we're at the end of the day we're talking misdemeanors, and
it's possible it's not just one misdemeanor. It could be a whole series of misdemeanors. Some misdemeanors, the fine is $3,700. And I fully agree with the sentiment that $1,000 would almost be the maximum 90% of the time. But there are occasions where you've got somebody who's got a lot of money and they've got a lot of reason never to show up again, that I would want to go higher than $1,000.
I agree.
So what?
I don't know what I do as far as a limit. If I would even want a limit, but I guess if I was going to set a limit, I can't imagine ever setting bail more than $10,000, almost regardless of what kind of misdemeanor or misdemeanors are there.
What about assault or endangering the welfare of a child and sexual misconduct? And is it somebody with a lot of money who didn't have significant ties to this?
But you know, think about it. generally people who have a lot of money have more to lose if they don't show up and take care of the problem. In other words, it's not like, it's not as if that person, if they abscond, now they have a charge of absconding, if they have, you know, bail jumping, they have other problems, and frankly, they're, people with a lot of money tend to have, they're involved in more, you know, lots of other things. They travel more, they're at greater risk of being caught than people who don't, in a weird sort of way. And again, Gwen, what I'm hearing you say is that if it's, you know, endangering the welfare of a child, or if it's, you know, sexual misconduct, am I hearing you say punitive, or are I hearing you saying there's a greater incentive to leave?
Greater incentive to leave.
Okay. How about if we use what, I hesitate to put any dollar amount in if it's going to be a big number, because it'll just simply encourage.
Yeah, I'd like to avoid using the number for that reason.
In some fashion.
You might be able to. You could just say, in those rare cases where bail is warranted, the maximum amount is set by the court. But there's one thing we could do. You could say at no greater than the maximum fine that could be assessed for the offense.
I don't think there's anything wrong with saying in the ordinary case, $1,000. Some cases are not ordinary.
Yeah, that's good, actually.
Well, just about every other case is in ordinary.
Yeah, but I don't know, because I don't want $1,000. We're saying the ordinary case is ROR.
Yeah. ROR, yeah. In fact, this is,
well,
you're listing.
Yeah, I'm saying the ordinary case is the bail statute.
I agree.
I mean, I said.
No, but we're asking for state legislation. Right. There was discussion about having, you know, that the state should look at the bail limits and reassess the fixing of bail in low-level cases.
I don't have a problem with the maximum fine.
How about $1,000 or, if you know of that, more than the maximum fine?
The maximum fine for a misdemeanor is $1,000.
$1,000.
Well, there are some.
But some there might be.
$3,500.
Yeah,
$3,700. Are they penal misdemeanors, or are they
ag and market?
Or?
They're
E&T.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right.
Ours,
E&T.
Great
revenue
stream. Yeah. Yeah. And if there were two misdemeanors, then you could have.
DUI, for example, can have killer big fines.
Right. But exactly. And it also, I think Glenn's point is that if you had multiple misdemeanors, then you can.
You can stack it up.
But, I mean, the financial ability of the defendant should be, that's one of the factors already, but I think that should drive the number most prominently anyhow, because, you know, this.
That would be ideal, but it's hard at First Amendment to get an accurate idea of what that is, unless it's glaringly apparent from.
Yeah. I mean, I think in.
Knowledge of the defendant.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. I don't think misdemeanor bail should be high. I don't think, but I think they should be high enough to ensure appearance in court. And I think that if we're going to put a maximum on it, but I'd go with probably a higher number than you want to have.
Remember, you always have the possibility of excessive bail hearings, and if somebody has assigned counsel anyway because they're broke.
No, I understand, but remember what we're trying to accomplish here is not to have people stuck in the system for a period of time while they're waiting to get out on bail.
Right.
And so I think, and again, reminding ourselves that we're talking misdemeanors, we're not talking felonies at this point. Jason? Yeah.
I mean, some of this comes down to the rushed nature of what goes on in these after-hour arraignments. And I know for myself, if I'm in Dryden, if I really need to look up someone's financial ability, I can get a pretty good idea by using my Lexis subscription, because I can do a person locator. But if I'm out in Danby, I don't think I can do that. Or if I'm out in some other courts, I just can't. And just looking at somebody isn't always going to tell you because I've seen some people come in looking pretty rough, and they're actually pretty well off. Like a couple of years ago, and I didn't do an arraignment on it, but I saw this video associated with the case, and the guy, someone was brought in, was actually one of the well workers from Pennsylvania, and he came to Ithaca to party, and those guys were breaking in about $150,000 a year,
yeah.
And at the time, but they don't look like it when they come in, whereas some people can be, you know, pretty clean cut at the time, and they make next to nothing. So,
it just seems it's pretty clear that most of us aren't real happy with the $1,000 limit.
Right.
We're looking for something higher, and we're having difficulty articulating what that would be. The fine seems kind of a
measurable
compromise.
Yeah, how about this language?
And it's only for those rare cases, because normally it's going to be ROR.
So here's, how about this language? At no greater than the maximum amount of any potential fine for the offense, comma, or such lower amount as a defendant can afford.
I could go for that.
I think that's good.
Can all live with that?
Isn't there an old case somewhere, Ray, where somebody got in trouble? It looked like bail money was being taken against the anticipated fund.
Hoping they'd never show up again and we just keep the bail.
Right. No, it's like Zoe. It's like when they're ultimately adjudicated
and
then the fine is right there in the bail money.
Right. You're not supposed
to. There's not an issue there. Because you're not supposed to do that.
You're not supposed to do that, but remember, this is prefaced by, in those rare cases, language, number one. And number two, more importantly, we're just recommending state legislation that makes bail a little bit more concrete.
Yeah,
that's all.
It's not a practice for the courts.
It's not a practice. It's state legislation. So.
Well, we're recommending that it be implemented in Tompkins. I mean, state legislation.
Well, this is in the section on that. The section on bail we've already discussed.
Right, but you're not going to incorporate this in any way into the earlier section about Tompkins County bail?
Are you kidding? We've just struggled with that language.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to leave it at that.
I think it's fine, but I think, speaking frankly, I think the chances of getting anything like this passed in New York State, given how state.
Would you feel more comfortable? Do you want us to put this in at page, put it in at?
I actually don't. I don't think it, I don't agree that we should be setting limits on bail.
I agree.
I don't think that's a good. But in fairness and trying to be a contributing member of this task force, I'm saying that you've got a way better chance of getting this going in Tompkins County than you do in New York State. Hell will freeze before Tioga, Cayuga, Erie, St. Lawrence, any of those places put limit on bail. They have incredible bails in those counties.
Okay, and you know what, Gwen? Actually, that's not a bad idea. Why don't we add a sentence? Page 40. Thank you.
Yeah.
At page 40.
That was out of the goodness of my heart.
I think this is what intellectual honesty is all about, and I appreciate that. At page 40, we could add a final sentence that says, in any event, the bail should not be set, or the maximum amount of any bail should not be set at a level that is any greater than the potential fine for the offense, or something along those lines. Same fine language. Are we in agreement?
Sure, yes.
Okay, fair enough. All right, let's go to the, I really would like to, because let's go to section four, because the future, that's the piece that.
Can you give us a page, Ray?
Page 45.
Thank you.
The last three pages of the document. What I tried to do, and I will confess that I am still working on it. I'm trying to kind of put into one section what I consider to be the two primary competing positions of this group. I think the one position is the changes that we are recommending as being either a function of voluntary or local, et cetera, but that's enough. There's no need to do more than that. And otherwise, the local courts continue in their 200-year tradition, 200-plus-year tradition. So that's one view. The other view is what I started out at the bottom of page 45 and pretty much devoted the balance of the document to, all of 46, part of 47, where I talk about it's clearly not going to happen without constitutional amendment. It's not going to happen easily. But I think it's a view that Jason has mentioned before. Frankly, I've mentioned it before. Others have alluded to it before in one way or another. It's the view that if you take our system and you establish basically a misdemeanor, centralized misdemeanor court, what you effectively do is you change the entire local town and village justice court system. You try to get rid of, I call it bleeding out, but you try to get rid of the what I would call the low-level stuff that ought to be handled technologically, because I really think that the courts spend a huge amount of time processing vehicle and traffic stuff, a huge amount of time processing low-level criminal stuff that really ought to be handled by going on the computer, click, 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 pay your money, and go your way. And I really think that that's where our society culturally is moving. And we live in a much different world than we lived in 100 years ago and 200 years ago and even 20 years ago. And so I tried to capture that as kind of a futuristic sort of approach that may or may not appeal. I'm sure it doesn't appeal to everybody in this group, but I think it is definitely a view of at least a good chunk of the membership. So I'm just curious about feedback. I'm not expecting there to be unanimity in terms of either position, but I just want to make sure that everybody's comfortable including both sides of the issue. And if either side requires further clarification or embellishment, I would be absolutely thrilled if people would jump in and share their thoughts.
I'll just start. I can see where you're going. I don't know that I necessarily have a problem with it. The allusion to the Brave New World sort of struck me even before I got to that part. The idea of the vast majority of the cases I see being handled by computer just doesn't fit real well. I understand it. It's more efficient. It does seem to cut the judge's role out if it's just a matter of accepting the plea bargain that the prosecutor has thrown out there. There's no mention of that plea bargain having to get cleared by the judge as well. And it turns the judge more into a clerk. But you know, we do have traffic bureaus in some cities in this state, which I think is effectively just what you're saying. You got a speeding ticket X number of miles over, you plead guilty, and they deal with it all administratively. You send in your check, you never see a court, and maybe that's the way we should go. I don't know.
I do that in Maryland somewhat, where they have a specific traffic court. Same thing in Washington, D.C. I remember seeing one on the Eastern Shore, and it was sort of a mill, though, because the judge would say at the beginning, anybody who pleads guilty now gets this.
The discount.
And then if you don't, you go through with the hearing and you lose, well, you lost the discount plus, and it was...
You know, apropos of that, I'm going to interrupt you only because I got a ticket in D.C. once.
And
not not long ago. I'm talking about within the past 5 years. And I was, and they sent me in the mail. It wasn't a court that sent this in the mail. It was a civil, it was a third-party vendor.
With a traffic camera?
And they had the traffic camera, and they had my RAV, and they had my license plate number. I mean, it was right there. It was plain as... Well, they didn't. And this was the deal. But here's the deal. This was handled, this speeding ticket doesn't show up anywhere in my driving abstract. It was purely an administrative, we got you. If you agree, you know, these are what our punishments are. In other words, we charge $300 for our speeding tickets. But if you send us a check for $150, there's no traffic ticket.
And you're good with that?
Well, I'm saying that's not what I'm talking about here, but I'm saying that my mind started, you know, kind of grinding, and I was thinking, you know what's happening here? D.C. is so cash-strapped that they can't afford to even pay the court, so they just probably hire this, you know, Joe third-party vendor to run this system.
Well, they have them,
collect
these
money,
traffic camera systems all over suburban D.C., D.C. There was lawsuits in San Diego when they installed them there.
Florida as well.
Yeah.
And in Florida, they're being withdrawn.
Yeah.
Yeah, But to go back, Glenn, I'm not suggesting that much, but I am suggesting, so maybe we need to, well, I don't know.
There's some point where efficiency kind of takes a soul out of the whole system. We got to be careful.
Would you privatize?
Take the fairness out of the system.
Yeah.
In terms of the direction that you've chosen here, and I'm not weighing in opposition, would you recommend privatizing the really minor offenses and letting some private company handle it and give the county and the municipality a couple of bucks on each fine? Is that okay with you?
No. I think I am not interested in anybody profiting off of the what I consider to be a public function. I am interested in making public functions, what are essentially within the public sphere,
more
making
efficient.
Them more user-friendly.
Sure.
And okay. I'm saying somebody who ends up with a speeding ticket or a stop sign or you know, any of these vehicle and traffic kinds of things should not have to go to court and sit there for 2 hours while all these cases are processed before their case is called. They ought to be able to go online, especially when either through the accident of having an attorney or not, depending on which place you're at, they will get it reduced from a 4-point speed to a 3-point speed, or they'll get it reduced from, you know, in some counties you can get them reduced from a speed to a failure to obey a traffic control device, a 2-pointer, on and on and on. And why should some people get that and some people don't? And some people have to spend a lot of time to get it and some don't. Why can't it be simple? You go online, there's a fairly simple policy that's established, you know, through the district attorney's office. I will agree that a court can always be free to say, no, I'm not going to accept this. But I would hope that over time most courts would say, you know, it makes the most sense for this kind of stuff.
I would encourage you to expand this discussion that you've created to emphasize that you're making an equity argument, a fairness argument, a justice argument, and that you see an opportunity in technology to augment fairness, not to create a profit center.
I think that argument could be made. I think it's important, though, that we limit it. Remember back in law school at the very beginning when they're teaching the difference between malum in se and malum prohibita? Remember that?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it was a long time ago. Now, I don't have a problem with it. Expedited black box business when it comes to these, you know, V&Ts. They're there are ways of regulating social organization interaction. We've got to regulate the roads. We've got to regulate things to make life go okay. And when we run afoul of those things, when we accidentally run a stop sign or we drive 15 miles over the speed limit, I think that's a very different animal than when we break into somebody's house and beat the living daylights out of them, and or break into their something. They criminally trespass somewhere. You know, I think there is a difference there for both the defendant and the public safety interest. So I sort of agree with what Mark's saying, as long as it's, and what you're saying, Ray, as long as it's limited to those things that don't raise deeper, more important questions about you know, crime, punishment, whatever.
When we're talking about, what we're talking about are administrative offenses, Gwen.
Right.
Where there is no mental state requirement, and in those circumstances, if it is the case now, and I don't suggest we use this language, but if it is the case now that people with means catch a break in virtually all cases and people without don't, there's something wrong with that. There's something fundamentally wrong with that. And we see technology as providing an opening to a fairer system.
I think that's a persuasive argument.
Yeah, and you guys are saying it better than I was or could, and I appreciate that, because that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to capture that.
Try to work on it, right?
Yeah, I guess I will, right.
We'll work on it too.
And anybody else who wishes to work on even snippets and send me phrases that they think would work, and I can incorporate it before the next time.
I think the very last paragraph is probably my biggest problem here. It says, once limited, the local justice system would more readily sort out those cases that should not or need not require judicial intervention. I'm not sure you can ever cut out judicial intervention.
He doesn't mean judicial intervention. He means having to leave your house when you can't afford it.
No. This is a different point. And what I'm talking about here, Glenn, and I've actually changed this language a little bit. Now I'm saying once implemented, the community justice system effectively would sort out those cases that should not or would not require. What I'm referring to is the combination
of the lead kind of
right.
Issue. Oh,
lead,
okay. I have no problem
court.
With that.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. To divert away from.
Yeah, what I'm saying is what I envision is the administrative offenses are handled through technology. The lead kinds of offenses are handled through lead. Youth court through youth court. Mental health court. So at the end of the day, what is left are the cases that truly require, frankly, intelligent, fair, wise, judicial intervention. Those are the cases, those are the naughty criminal cases. Those are the cases of assault. Those are the cases burglaries. And those are the cases where I'm saying, absolutely, we need courts to do that, but let's free them of all these other distractions, I call it, but nuisances, whatever. Free them of those cases so that we will have a leaner, meaner set of courts that can deal with, I don't mean meaner, meaning like meaner, like evil meaner, or, you know, oppressive.
Like prosecutorial meaner.
Yeah. We will have a leaner court system that can actually focus on doing the business of which courts are supposed to do, which is to do justice in the difficult cases.
Well, okay, if that's true, then on 46, when you start to talk about further, the misdemeanor court would be able to focus almost exclusively on more problematic low-level cases. And then you talk about lead, youth court, drug court, possibly mental health court, reducing the flow of potential criminal cases. But then, in the second to last paragraph, you have the sentence about a system bearing the imprint of Brave New World for an assumed consumer citizenry that increasingly expects fast-paced, technologically enabled convenience. This is a logical, efficient, uniform, and fair way of addressing some of life's nuisances that are otherwise of little consequence. That's not apposite. It doesn't follow from, unless I'm missing something.
What doesn't follow?
You're talking about cases that would be amenable to community resolution outside the justice system.
Right.
But you're talking about the kinds of things that would be the subject of LEAD, youth court, drug court, and mental health court, and you're saying they're of little consequence.
Okay. You're right. That are otherwise of little consequence, maybe I should say to the courts.
I'll work on that.
No, I understand what you're saying. The of little consequence refers to the administrative offenses. It does not refer to necessarily the LEAD situations.
The cases that you're talking about diverting in the proceedings.
Some of the cases that would be diverted are not of little consequences. Right. They are greater than little consequences.
They just need to be dealt with in a different way.
That they need to be dealt with, yes. I'll give you that. That's a good...
Are you talking about things like the quality of life crimes, yes, like the open containers?
Sure. Well, I think soon we're going to be seeing a situation where we're going to be dealing with crimes, addiction-driven crimes and possession crimes. I think we're going to start seeing pressure to deal with them in very different ways. At least I hope.
We're already seeing.
Yeah.
Those are of huge consequence societally. I just think your meaning gets lost.
No, I agree with that. What I did was I shorthanded some of life's nuisances that otherwise are of little consequence refers to the administrative offense level, as we've been discussing here earlier. It does not refer to the LEAD, so we need to be.
They may be administrative. There are two sets. There's a set of administrative offenses. Then there's a set that overlaps it that includes things that are not purely administrative offenses, but whether they are or they are not, they require more.
But they don't require judicial intervention.
No, but they require more, and the object is to get them the more.
Right. Right.
Outside.
Right.
The
yes.
Context of the
justice court. That's a fair point. So we need to work on that language as well.
And look at 6.
Pardon?
I'd look at 6 p.m.
And I know. And I think that's a good place to end. Except we need to come up with a new date.
We can do that.
So.
Well, we're thinking whether or not we added value.
Well, that's right.
I'm going to be gone
for
the week beginning, what is it, the 11th? Monday?
Oh.
So. Oh, then. That leaves us the weekend between Scott leaving on the, or coming back on the 8th, and Mark leaving on the
'cause I'm leaving on the morning of the 9th, and I won't be back till the 12th.
There you go.
So we're having some trouble.
Can we get Scott in on the, he said he'd be back on the 8th?
The 8th is a Friday.
Maybe we can get him in on a Friday. You don't want to meet on a Friday?
I'm going to Pittsburgh Friday.
All right. If Scott is the only person who can't be here, I would prefer that we then meet on the 6th and get this finished.
And see if Scott will. You'll see the email from him. Just urge him to send you.
Can we Skype him in?
Well, we can try, depending on where he is. I don't know where he is.
Because, I mean, theoretically, I'm on grandparent duty the following 3 weeks, but I'm willing to come in. If we wanted to come in on the 13th, I could.
The likelihood of us getting everybody is pretty small.
Right, right. But we also have a lot of work to do between now and next Wednesday. But I'm committed to do it. I'm on a roll now, so I got to get it done. And candidly, we do need to get it done. Even if we met, you know, we had a final document that we met and we said it's good. We just need to obviously, you know, do some of the editing, that put in citations and that kind of stuff. But then we could suspend, and then come back together, you know, August 1st or something, and be done with it. Or we could even just sign off electronically and not have to bother meeting again. So
the 6th at 4:30 here.
Is everybody available on the 6th at 4:30 here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Here may have to be there.
Okay.
There's a committee meeting in the chambers at the same time. So we'll find your meeting room, probably at the old jail.
Okay.
All right. And Joe, could you circulate that, like, tomorrow?
Yeah, I will.
And what I'm going to do, I'll send out an email tonight to Liz, because I want her to know. I'll just send it out to everybody and just say, we're meeting on the 6th at 4:30, and Joe will announce where we're going to be meeting. So all the more reason, I would appreciate if anybody has any comments, any language changes, if they could get them to me by Friday, I would appreciate it, because the weekends are really the only time that I can kind of work on this stuff. Okay?
By Friday, yeah, day after tomorrow, yeah.
Is that all right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even Saturday morning, that'd be fine.
Mary, I missed your comment there. May I ask a question?
Sure. And Michael, we welcome.
I look quickly at your future section you're just talking about. Is it intentional to say nothing about the possibility in the future of having a district court?
The word district court, that phrase, I think has conjured up because of what, you know, candidly, what we saw down in Nassau County was not very encouraging. Nassau County's district court has a holding cell with no arraignment overnight or on weekends, or at least overnight, number one. Number two, they do not process traffic offenses, yeah, except through personal appearance, et cetera.
Yeah, I heard them.
So I think we did. So what I've talked about here is essentially a district court, but we're not calling it that because I think it has too much baggage.
But I thought one possibility might be to talk about what a district court would look like in Compton County as opposed to Nassau County.
Whether we want to call it a district court or a misdemeanor court, or misdemeanor level court, it's the same thing, because the district court
is currently
permitted. Why do you care whether we call it a district court?
Is that currently permitted by law, a district court?
It is permitted by law.
That would be the reason.
I think one reason why we've shied away from it is some are opposed to it, but I think it would require so many hoops to jump that one fear is that if we shoot for something like that, we're just going to torpedo all our efforts, that we're going to get so much opposition that we won't even be able to get through some of the more modest improvements.
Are there minutes on this somewhere? This happened during one of my many hospital stays. I wasn't a part
yeah.
of any.
You mean the Nassau County? Yeah, there's
yeah, Nassau County, yeah. And any discussion that happened in this body about the pros and
yes.
cons of...
I think if you kind of went to the district, to the Nassau County minutes, which I think were about late January, early February.
I can surf in my...
And then there, periodically, we discussed the notion of district court or misdemeanor versus in some of the meetings thereafter in March and April.
One of the problems with the district court was not only if they had this no arraignments at night and people just went to jail overnight, but that was one problem. But the other problem was they got rid of none or effectively none of the lower level courts. They still had 60 some village courts or something.
Yeah, they went from 62
to 60. And they
were
adding this huge layer of bureaucracy and complication and expense. It was just mind-boggling.
But here's an idea. I know what Michael is alluding to. It's conceivable that we could... here's the practical problem. The only way a district court can be implemented anywhere in the state is by vote of both the municipalities involved and through this enabling legislation. But it requires the municipalities involved to vote affirmatively to do it, which is effectively, and one of the points raised in the, I think in our section one, is that it's never happened, other than in Nassau and Suffolk County. And those were creatures of the, not sure whether they did that by vote or whether that was done legislatively, but in any event, Nassau and Suffolk County were the only places where they have been authorized to do it every other place, it's not even been attempted because nobody, the individual municipalities have, it would not support it. I don't want to misspeak. I think the practical problem is, I'll be glad to try to craft some language saying that under the Constitution, we could seek to implement a district court, but that it is highly unlikely that the vote is, you know, that it could be done. I mean, I just don't see it happening. I see it happening more through a constitutional amendment as opposed to a vote of the populace.
So it's referendum?
It's a referendum.
Yeah.
That's clearly under the district court legislation. I went and read that. It requires the vote of each municipality to, in essence, say we want to dissolve. We don't want a town and village court. We want the, not a town and village. We don't want the town court. We want to have a district court. And they have to, each municipality has to vote affirmatively. And maybe, I don't know. Do you think Dryden would support such a thing?
My land, so I don't know about.
Well, if you were going to have, no, I remember one of the conversations we had in here was if we had a district court, would we have one location in the county or would we have two? Because
right.
I remember I spoke up and I said I think two would be better. But we wouldn't be talking about, we'd have to have the entire population of Tompkins County vote in a referendum, municipality by municipality. I mean, I know we haven't talked about this in months, but if the upshot were going to be centralized courts from beginning to end, one or two, then I think that there would be a possibility of that becoming a politically popular idea. And I think that it certainly would promote more even-handed justice. And I think that it wouldn't have to be a no after hours arraignment court. It could be whatever we decided to make it. It wouldn't have to have any rules that are not the creatures of statute that we don't want.
I think that, I mean, like Dryden years ago, the village dissolved its court, merged it into the town court.
Right.
Village of Freeville, I did talk to the mayor offhand about it. They're not interested in dissolving their court. But, you know, seeing that, you know, Enfield reduced their court from two to one justice.
I mean, that's very different than going to
a district court, but it's, I think there's, depending on the model that's presented, maybe the public would consider it.
I don't know. Based on what we heard from the public in the context of these meetings, certainly doesn't sound like they'd go for it. It's very, it's very community-driven, people's attitudes about their judges, and I don't know if it would work or not. But I think Mike makes a good point that we should acknowledge that it was something that was discussed. Because it was a big part of the discussion at the beginning. Remember,
yes.
We were going to get that law student to do all that research, and then he couldn't.
Right.
And I think it's something that I agree would probably not fly right now, but I don't think that means it's not worth looking at. I mean, down the road. I don't mean that we're going to change our Section 3 recommendations now.
There was a, if you look, this captures part of it. If you look at pages 12 through 15 of our draft, in 1962, the here's where this describes it. In 1962, the judiciary article authorized the legislature to replace the district court. So this was the constitutional amendments that were made in 62. They authorized the legislature to replace justice courts with district court systems throughout the state. Okay?
Yeah.
However, it specifically preserved the historical prerogative of each locality to maintain its own justice court and prohibited the legislature from abolishing any town tribunal, whether or not in favor of a district court, except with express consent of town voters. So as late as 77, blah, 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 they basically, so the bottom line is, and it hasn't happened. And the Tweed Commission had recommended it. So I think as a, but you're right, Michael. If each town voted to eliminate, and it wouldn't have to be, you could have a district, effectively a district court. For instance, in Suffolk County, they have a district court, but it only covers the counties that are in the western side of the county. The eastern end of the county still has their town village courts. So theoretically, if the town of Ithaca and the village of Cuyahoga Heights and the town of village of Lansing, if they decided to abolish their, some segment of Tompkins County decided to abolish and asked the legislature to create a district court, that could happen. But it would take the affirmative vote of each of those municipalities in order to set it up.
If people wanted to do that, they could have done it already. I don't think our putting something in a report is going to cause them to do it. But what I think, if we do put it in and recommend it, I don't have a problem with it being mentioned that we discussed it and decided not to recommend it, but if we actually recommend it, my fear is that it's going to draw so much attention, so much reaction, that some of the other things are just going to get ignored in the process.
How about if we do this? My sense of this is, if we could put in a paragraph or a couple of paragraphs that would describe that possibility. In other words, any municipality could do this under the existing constitution. But the committee is, our task force is loath to recommend that unless it became countywide. Now, I'm not saying the task force wants to do countywide, but if it were less than countywide, it would become nothing more than the experience of Suffolk County, which is basically doesn't accomplish a whole lot.
Yeah, because the implementation of the district court doesn't mean that the justice courts can't keep holding court every week the way they have been for the last 80 years.
Let me work on some language. I think you're right, Michael. I appreciate that. I think there should be at least an acknowledgement that that is already there and people could do it, But is it the sense of the committee that we don't wish to recommend that? Or do we wish to recommend it?
What's the that?
That
the district court.
That municipalities, that those who choose to go into a district court should do it.
I think it's a subject worth mentioning. I think it's a subject that we spend a lot of time focusing on. I think it's also a subject that we're not willing to recommend.
As I said earlier, I might be inclined to go in that direction if I had more information, but we never got all of the information, and then I was gone, and I think you guys have information that I didn't have. So I'm not going to say I'm willing to recommend it today, but it could change in the future.
I think you have to say it's an option.
It definitely is an option.
Or not, there's a solid recommendation because it's one of the possibilities.
I don't recommend it.
Okay, there are actually two different things. Right now, for instance, under state legislation, short of a district court, courts can consolidate if they're adjacent.
Right.
Okay. So the district court would allow for, instead of just adjacent, it would allow for, three who might be one adjacent to another. In other words, it might be a string kind of a gathering. But it does provide for, there's a progression of consolidation that is permissible. But in my view, it just makes it a more confusing system and creates differing expectations depending on where you are in the county. And so I have a problem with that. I think it's either countywide or it's not. That's my view of it. But I will take a shot at writing some language that at least acknowledges that this is out there and that this could be done. But we don't need the task force to be recommending this. That's up to each municipality to decide, something along those lines. If people feel differently or wish to weigh in or wish to tweak it, please do so. In the meantime, we'll try to meet, we intend to meet next Wednesday at 4:30. Do we add value?
Yes.
All value. Thank you.